Welcome to Real Estate Investing Abundance, the show for busy, fulfilled professionals like you to learn how to develop financial independence built on solid, passive real estate investments. Now, here is your host, Dr. Alan Lomax.
Hello, enlightened investors. Welcome, and I'm delighted that you are joining us for the launch of our new podcast, Real Estate Investing Abundance. Three times each week, we will bring value bombs of investment wisdom from the most successful and renowned experts in the industry. The focus is on passive investment in real estate to help you as our listeners develop financial independence to live life abundantly. If you enjoy the show, please take a moment, find us on Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review. Reviews are vital to growing our audience so we can help more people find their avenue to financial freedom. Each week for the first 4 weeks, we will do a drawing of all those who submit reviews. The winner of the drawing will receive a $25 Barnes & Noble gift certificate. So please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. Enlightened investors, happy to be back with you again today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan. Investors, do you ever wonder if the investment opportunity is the right opportunity at the right time? Though there are always unknown factors, a well-grounded, data-driven approach to analysis reduces the risk tremendously. Today, we are going to look at the hard data as we talk with the industry's leading data guru, a process freak, and an outsourcing expert. He treats his personal $250 million multifamily portfolio as an ongoing experiment in efficiency and optimization. As busy, successful professionals passionate about the work of your calling, you may have come to realize that the hope of developing financial independence has taken a backseat to the priorities of following your passion. If you can identify, as I certainly can, I have good news. Steed Talker Capital is an investment company designed for passionate, fulfilled professionals like you and me to develop financial security built on solid real estate investments that deliver passive streams of ongoing income. Go to our website, steedtalker.com, and enroll in the Enlightened Investor Circle. There you'll receive education and support for your passive real estate investing goals, no matter your level of investment experience. With us today is the mad scientist of multifamily investing, Neil Bawa. Neil lives by two mantras. His first is that we can only manage what we can measure. His second mantra is that data beats gut feel by a million miles. His data-driven approach to investing disrupts many of our closely held beliefs to liberate us to invest more abundantly. Neil, before we delve into the numbers, you have a formative experience from your very early childhood years that bears repeating. So just briefly reflect on that early childhood experience that changed the trajectory of your life.
Absolutely. I'm Indian. Firstly, I want to thank you for having me back on the show. I know we did this with a different version of the show, so thrilled to be back. That early childhood experience was traumatic, but was also very interesting in how it formed me. So when I was, I think I was about 9 years old, they found that I was borderline autistic. So thinking a less aggressive version of Rain Man. And so they sent me, my father used to work for the Air Force, so they had these nice Air Force hospitals. They sent me there, and a psychologist took me under her wing, and she fixed me. She basically went through this, you know, fairly elaborate process of making sure that I didn't withdraw into my shell. But as she went through that process, she came across something that no one had noticed. Surprisingly, my mom hadn't noticed, and my teachers hadn't noticed, that I could see numbers in everything. She realized that I could see numbers. And again, it's a little bit of what the Dustin Hoffman feel, but I, in a very interesting way, I can take any content and break it into numbers. And so she felt that while she could fix my going into my shell because of autism, she shouldn't fix this. She felt like that was a gift, that it's not something to be mocked. And so she encouraged me to basically develop that activity, to develop that concept of looking at something and seeing the numbers. For those of you that remember the movie The Matrix, Neo could actually read the matrix by looking at the numbers that were falling from top to bottom and convert that into people and things and places. And I think that I have a very, very light case of that. And once she encouraged it in me, I actually tried to bring that to everything in my life. And that's why now I'm known as the mad scientist. I put an enormous amount of content out on the web on lots of interesting topics like climate change or disruptive trends in real estate, where I look at long-term 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, 30-year numbers and try to bring that into interesting conclusions, some of them very controversial. And so all of that was really formed by this incidence of autism, or near brush with autism, as I like to call it, when I was 9. And it turned into something truly amazing for me. It led me to where I am in my life.
I'm just curious. You keep referring to Rain Man. When that movie came out, which, gosh, what was that, 20, 30 years ago? Did you see it when it first came out?
I think so. I'm not sure. I think it came out after, you know, my bout with autism had ended. And I think I may have seen it a few years after it came out, but not particularly during that time. I think I was into Aliens and Star Wars back then, not particularly Oscar winning.
Yeah.
So it might have taken me a while before I got to it.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you had a sense of identification when you first saw it.
The movie, yes, I very strongly did, because I was like, I think I can feel what this person is feeling. Yeah. I've felt it before. And again, my case is nowhere near that extreme, but it's interesting how your childhood sort of forms who you are. And if you Google me, you'll see that mad scientist moniker, and it really comes from that.
You certainly do bring numbers to life. I am not a numbers person, and even I enjoy our conversations that center around numbers. You've been looking at this aspect of climate change. So whether or not people think it is real, whether they think it's a hoax, whether they do believe it is happening, but they're not sure whether it is caused by humans or a natural phenomena, you have been looking at the data in conjunction with climate change and that effect upon real estate. As I mentioned before we started, I'd like to focus our conversation today on that. I don't know where you want to start. You want to start with the historical data, or where do you want to start with this?
Maybe with my thought process, right? So I am a real estate guy. I'm predominantly a developer, though I buy value-add multifamily buildings and I hold them all across the United States. And I do not invest in any one particular market or any one particular state. I'm known for being the syndicator in the real estate market that has assets in the most number of states. So as I do not know of any syndicators that have active assets in 10 states in the US. And people might say, why 10 states? And the answer is, why not? As far as I'm concerned, it's likely that at some point that number will go up instead of going down. And I think if you use a data-driven approach, you'll notice that markets change from time to time. And there's no doubt that there's some markets in the US that are truly great, like San Francisco is a truly great market, but it may not be a great investment market. Dallas has been a truly great market and a truly great investment market for a long time, but that's changing. I don't think that Dallas is where the money is today. I think it's Austin. I think it's New Brunswick. So what I noticed was that great cities remained great cities and you could make money there, but they may not be exactly the maximum opportunity, the best risk reward benefit. That changed all the time. So this climate change seed, it actually came from my obsession. I've had this obsession in people. There's about 50,000 people on the web following this obsession of mine, which is to figure out the best cities and neighborhoods in the US to invest in and the metrics and the data that goes behind that. And I do 4 or 5 webinars a year on multifamilyu.com that basically provides my feedback and my gut feeling on these. And you're welcome to watch these. They're all free. And when I'm doing that, I'm looking for, okay, what are the metrics that really control my investor's short-term, mid-term, long-term profit? So I have a $500 million portfolio, 22 projects in 10 states. And on each of those, I'm looking at, okay, what's affecting the local market? What's affecting the state? What's affecting the country? What's affecting short-term, mid-term, long-term? So when I was looking at metrics, one of the metrics that kept coming up is climate risk. And climate risk is not considered a short-term metric. It's considered both a medium-term. And in the medium-term bucket, it's one of the big ones. In the long-term one, it's considered by far the largest. So think of climate risk being the 800-pound or 8,000-pound gorilla when you look at long-term risk to real estate. And so there's a few things I want to reel off that I think will get this conversation going. Number one, most savvy people, and we're not talking about politicians, because climate change is a politicized area. Getting information from the Republican Party or the Democratic Party is a very bad thing to do. From what I can see, these people are paying, right? Either believers or non-believers to write a bunch of stuff, which is completely biased. But as you can see, some areas are more politicized than others. So if you look at top five politicized areas in the US, I'm sure climate shows up in that list. So I look at everything that they've output with skepticism, which means that I basically can't read any of their stuff. So what I'm left with is to follow the money. Climate change is big. It's a big deal. And even if you don't believe in climate change, I think everybody on this the podcast knows the damage that New York and Miami and other places have taken because of climate, maybe not climate change, but climate. So you know that it's big dollars. Where there's big dollars with a big billion or a big trillion, there are going to be people following the dollars and following the profit. So there's reports there. So I've been looking at that data. And when I look at that data, the first thing that appears to me is very few people in the US understand just how devastating this impact is, even if it's not caused by hydrocarbons. So what I realized, to my absolute astonishment, is that as an investor that's looking to preserve and grow capital, and as an investor that's looking for the next gold rush, so we've had some amazing gold rushes in the last 20 years, Amazon.com, the internet, Microsoft, and Google, and then we'd had gold rushes in real estate from 2008 onwards. When you're looking for that next gold rush, it helps you. You're not, maybe you're a conservative investor, but who wouldn't want to invest conservatively in California in the 1850s when the gold rush was underway? It just makes your life easier. It makes things better. So when I'm looking at that gold rush, there's a climate-related gold rush that is inevitable, and it's inevitable regardless of whether you believe that climate change is caused by fossil fuel. So if you take the entire argument of whether you believe in fossil fuels causing climate change or not, you keep it aside, right? You put on your non-believer hat. Even then, the data is incredibly compelling, and it's very clear to anybody that looks at it that there's a lot of money to be lost and a lot of money to be made. And that's where I started my climate risk journey. And the second thing, so that was the first thing, that you don't have to believe in climate change to profit from it. The second piece was, it's very obvious that real estate is actually the hardest hit market because of climate risk. So once again, everybody on this podcast will agree with me that hurricanes are getting stronger because it only takes you 2 minutes on the NOAA website to look at how many hurricanes we've had compared to how many hurricanes we used to have. So again, what causes it? We separate that, we leave it to the politicians to decide, but it's clear that something is happening, and whether we control it or not, it is going to affect us. And the area that will be affected the most is real estate across the world. Right? It's real estate across the world. It's real estate in the United States. And so I looked at it and I said, so if we are the vertical, if we are the industry that is the most affected, why isn't anybody talking about this? And the answer is people are talking about it. People are making decisions. People are making huge decisions that affect everyone that's listening to this podcast, but they're not in the public realm because those people are terrified by what's happening with the politicians. So they are quietly making very large decisions, very fundamental decisions that are going to change real estate investing, but they're not talking about it publicly because they're afraid that either the Democrats are going to hate them or the Republicans are going to hate them, or likely both parties will hate them. So I started digging into the changes that are happening in the background, multi-trillion dollar changes in the way that portfolios are being handled. And those are the insights that I've now started sharing with people and started doing webinars saying, do you see this is what's happening in the marketplace? But yes, nobody's talking about it because these people don't want any attention.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Would you ever invest all your money in a single stock? Very unlikely. Yet investors are willing to risk $50,000 to $100,000 in a single property in real estate all the time. Avestor is the world's first customizable real estate investment platform. Investors can build their own custom portfolio selecting investments across multiple asset classes such as single-family homes, multifamily, student housing, self-storage, and shopping centers. You can also invest across multiple markets and different time frames. Avestor also enables other real estate entrepreneurs and syndicators to build and use Avestor's infrastructure and cloud platform to create their own customizable real estate funds. To learn more, visit us at avestorinc.com. Avestor, real estate investing made simple.
Whether you believe it or you don't believe it, it doesn't really matter because those who are in control of our financial environments that have direct impact upon our real estate clearly are making decisions based upon their belief that something's going to happen.
Yeah, and there's buckets of those people, right? So these people that control our destiny as real estate investors are people at the city level, city officials, they believe, okay? There's hedge fund managers like Blackstone that have $7 trillion portfolios. They believe. There's insurance companies that are going to drive our net operating income by doing what they've been doing for the last 5 years. The insurance companies are the ones that are most visible today to people because you've already seen an incredible impact. There's mortgage providers that are about to make major decisions that are going to affect the 30-year mortgage in this country. And then there's people who are buying and changing cap rates. So throughout the United States, there's these five buckets of people that all control our destiny. They control cap rates, they control prices. They believe, to them, there is no climate change argument. They've already bought into it. Once again, maybe they're idiots. It doesn't change the fact that over the next 5 years, they will make decisions that will impact us in a tremendous way, because to them, that debate is over. So I want to start with Blackstone, right? So imagine you are the largest, you know, money manager in the world. You have $7 trillion in assets. I can imagine that a humongous portion of that is real estate, but they do all kinds of stuff. Imagine that you've decided that the climate change debate is over and you've decided you believe. And so what you do is you put an office together, you know, that basically looks at climate change, and you say, we're going to go and figure out who in the US, who in the world understands climate change and climate risk the most. We're going to buy their data. We're going to set up an office, and that office is going to rank every investment that we're considering making in our $7 trillion portfolio on climate risk. And if there's too much climate risk, we simply won't make the investment. And then we're going to publicly put this on our website saying, we are doing this, investors. If you're investing, if you're part of our $7 trillion fund, you'd better know that we are not going to go into areas that have high climate risk or perceived high climate risk. That's Blackstone, right? Now take that example and replicate it across other trillion-dollar entities, pension funds, hedge funds, quasi-government organizations that are managing government money. And every few months, more and more of these say the climate change debate is over. When we make investment decisions, we have this chief investment officer. That investment officer is getting data. And I'm going to tell you in a moment where the data is coming from, because that's an interesting story. But that group is now making investments based on those climate change parameters. And that's going to impact everything you do in every market in the US, whether you like it or not. So that's really one of the five kind of rungs. And all five rungs are using data from one source, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
So this example you just gave us, considering Blackstone, if I understand, that is not hypothetical. That is actually happening.
That's right. Please go to the Blackstone website. They very clearly state that all investments that Blackstone makes are gauged on climate risk. And they believe that Blackstone actually believes in the worst scenario of climate change. And so they're saying, we simply cannot make a 10-year investment anywhere in the world that doesn't factor this in. So it is an absolute, it's not exaggerated. They are doing it. And they're just one example, because they're the ones that have been more public with it. And Blackstone has taken an activist approach. They're saying, when we invest, let's say, $5 billion into a city, $5 billion is a big amount of money, we tell that city that we cannot make an investment if you're anti-climate change. We want to invest in cities that are pro-climate change. So they are not just using their money to make investment decisions on the basis of climate risk. They're using their money to force other people to follow their lead.
Enlightened investors will be right back after this important message. I hope you're finding today's show informative and enlightening, and that you will please take a moment to find us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. Each week for the first 4 weeks of the launch, we will hold a drawing of all those who submit reviews. The winner of the drawing will receive a $25 Barnes & Noble gift certificate. Reviews are very important for growing our audience. Your review will be immensely appreciated and will help others find their avenue to financial freedom. I can see why that would have direct impact upon city planners, county planners, and even state planners when someone like Blackstone comes in and tells them, if you don't believe in climate change, we're not investing here. That's going to change the conversation real fast.
But keep in mind, that's only half the cities in the US that may have trouble with climate change, mostly Republican parts of the US. But the Democrat parts of the city, the US, the cities were already sold on it. So do you know that Miami is considering building a sea wall, basically a wall to prevent the sea from flooding Miami? And you might say, really, that the Miami gets flooded? Please do your research. Parts of Florida are now getting flooded several weeks every year. Not in the future, not some dystopian sort of thing. Portions of Miami and portions of Tampa get flooded every year, and every single year the water rises. Once again, who cares whether this is fossil fuel or not? Just look at the data. Go call the city of Miami and say, could you tell me more about what's happening with flooding there? And they'll tell you what's actually happening in their city, because there are parts of Miami that look like a water park every year. And this is just not in the, obviously, if you're listening to CNBC, MSNBC, you probably see more of this than if you're watching Fox. But I don't think that it's enough in the public conversation. But it should be if you're looking to invest in Miami, because if they're building a seawall, they're going to pass that on as property taxes. And that's going to significantly impact it. New York's looking to build a $200 billion seawall. And you might say, yeah, New York's now not going to invest that money. One hurricane, so we've had a hurricane that hit New York head on, remember, basically turned Wall Street into a swimming pool. That hurricane by itself, the damage was $60 billion. No one can dispute that, because that's actual dollars that were lost. And insurers have warned the city of New York that if that happens once more, significant portions of the insurance will be withdrawn or will become outrageously expensive, forcing New York to do something. And if they build a $200 billion seawall, they're going to basically pass on maybe half of that through property tax increases. So it's all okay to say Blackstone's the one driving this. The truth is, half of the cities already believe, half of the cities are already making changes, and half of the cities are already taxing the real estate investor, because property taxes are one of the big ways that this money is going to come out. And so that's going to be a significant impact on you, right? So the first rung is Blackstone. The second rung is cities themselves are taking action all across the United States, even in Republican places. Republican governors and congressmen in Texas are saying, what happened can never be allowed to happen again. We cannot have Texas freezing. This will happen again. We need to fix the power grid. Where does Texas get the money to fix their power grid? Well, the answer, obviously, is Texas gets it from property taxes, because they don't have state income taxes in Texas, or very little. So when their source is property taxes, which are one of the highest in the US, guess what? They're about to get higher.
Yeah, so that is definitely going to have an impact on real estate. So you had mentioned that you were going to share this company that is providing this data.
That's an interesting story. So we all know this evil company, Moody's, that basically was part of the reason why we had the 2008 crash. They had all these crappy mortgages with defaults. The companies would tie them up, and Moody's would put an A-plus stamp on top of it to sell to investors. And half of those were defaults. Obviously, those collateralized debt obligations were part of the toxic debt that caused the crash. And so Moody's went back and said, okay, we've got to do a better job of this. And so they started basically making sure that their future ability to gauge risk included elements like climate change. When they looked at it, they realized that the biggest long-term risk that our investors are taking is climate risk. Once again, who cares what causes it? It's obvious that something causes it. So they looked at it and they said, we don't know enough about this stuff. So they went and did research, and they realized there was a company called 427, 427, that already for years had been advising governments and pension funds and people like Blackstones and cities about the impact of climate change. They went and bought this company. And what they did was, they didn't just buy this company. They took the company's six-step rankings that basically look at every kind of event: flooding, hurricanes, typhoons, extreme heat, wildfires, drought, water tables, tidal flooding. They looked at all of that stuff that this company was looking at, and they incorporated that into the Moody's ranking, the big Moody's ranking that everyone in Wall Street uses. That there's literally trillions of dollars of transactions happening based on Moody's rankings and S&P 500, these two companies. When somebody from the Danish pension fund wants to buy $2 billion worth of some municipal asset, the rating that they're looking at is the Moody's rating. Now the Moody's rating, it has the climate risk stuff incorporated. So this is the third rung, where basically Now, the ratings agencies are saying everything we do, we believe that climate risk is real because we're looking at the $80 billion in annual losses. And we see that those losses are going up much faster than inflation. They're not going up 2% a year. They're going up 20, 30, 50% a year. So we think it's real. There's no argument. We're going to take that and stick it into every rating we ever do. Can you imagine the impact? There are millions of stock transactions on the New York Stock Exchange every day that are now influenced by this, and nobody knows. And so that is so powerful. That is so incredibly powerful because it's almost like it's affecting you every single day if you're trading anything, and you don't even know that it's affecting you. And then you have superstar, or I should say megastar companies like Apple that are clearly stating that we will not work with any supplier for an iPhone that does not use climate risk or climate change and climate risk in their evaluation of their sub-suppliers, their locations, and the projects that they're working on. If you don't provide us with a clear methodology for how you're using climate risk, you can't be a supplier for the iPhone, the iPad, and the Mac.
Wow.
Look at the impact that creates in a $2 trillion ecosystem that Apple has created and the $10 trillion worth of suppliers, that the downstream suppliers that Apple buys its products from. Because if somebody forms a ESD strategy, they can't just say, we only apply this to Apple. They have to then formulate that and apply it across the board and say, this is our strategy. So even if you don't believe in climate change, your board's going to push you because your main supply, your main buyer is Apple, and they do that. So Apple is very heavy on this, which is why it's forcing Samsung to be heavy on it, because Samsung supplies every screen on every iPhone. And those are $100 screens. So it's a gigantic amount of money that Samsung receives from Apple, hundreds of billions of dollars. And so when Apple forces Samsung to do this, they have to create an ESD department that's overseeing all of their climate change initiatives. And then they have to roll it across every single arm of their company. And that's what's happening. Big people forcing everyone else to follow their lead.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. As an industry-leading, relationship-focused, design-build construction firm, Mosaic Construction has worked in many different asset classes from multifamily to retail, medical, industrial, and commercial. Mosaic Construction works to execute interior and exterior renovations with their team of trades and project managers. Their experience with value-add improvements has resulted in increased ROI and long-term value of the assets. They work nationally in partnership with local trades to deliver thoughtful, problem-solving construction management solutions to all their clients. For a personal, no-obligation consultation, call Ira Singer, 773-491-3145, or email Ira at mosaicconstruction.net. You can also find Ira on LinkedIn.
But you talk about this as a 15-year futuristic look, but it sounds to me like it's right here with us today. I don't think we're going to have to wait 15 years for the impact.
The impact is strong. I think that the awareness curve is 15 years. So let's look at it this way. On March 1st of last year, less than 1% of the American population believed that the coronavirus would completely turn their lives up and down. On April 1st, that number was 100%. So the coronavirus had a 30-day awareness curve from 1% to 100%. I was doing a video early in March telling people this is the biggest thing that you've seen in your entire life. And the people were laughing at me. And no video of mine has ever been flamed as much as that early COVID video that I posted in early March. And then obviously things much worse than that happened because I was projecting 150,000 deaths and they were like, you must be nuts. So we're at nearly 600,000 deaths at this point. So the awareness curve of climate and its impact on real estate, because I'm really focused on real estate risk for investors. I still think that we're at 1%. You talk to investors, as far as they're concerned, it's okay, so yeah, climate risk, I know it's a big deal, but I've never really tied it back to my real estate investments. As far as I'm concerned, there is no connection between the two. These are two separate things. And over the next 15 years, we're going to go from zero awareness of that risk to real estate to 100%. And so somewhere along the curve, every investor starts to make their decision on, am I investing in this market and do I understand the climate risk? There are already investors talking about it. When we invested in Houston, we had about 20% of our investors that came to us and said, Houston floods, and you're investing near a bayou, you're investing near the lake. And we had to show to them that A, we were not in a flood zone, and B, we didn't have any units on the ground floor. We had garages on the ground floor, and then all the units were above that. You could have 10 feet of flooding and it wouldn't really affect any of the units. It's just a garage. So we had to have those conversations today with investors. And I think that in the future, there won't be an investment deck in America, like where Alan Lomax is pitching his 250 unit in Tennessee. Alan's going to need to have multiple slides of his deck that discuss this with their investors. So far, I haven't seen anyone do it. There's sometimes I see an obligatory slide that's talking about floodplains. But other than that, I've never seen it. But I think that you and everyone else will basically need to do this as we go further into this process. Mm-hmm. So it's a 15-year curve. But like all curves, at the 15-year mark, every single investor in America knows and understands. But even at the five-year mark, it could mean that 20%, 15% of the investors in the U.S. are making those decisions. So it's a journey, and it may take less than 15 years. I certainly don't think it takes more than 15.
15% is a significant number in terms of changing the trajectory of just about anything.
Absolutely.
In terms of regions in the United States, who are the losers? Who are the winners in terms of climate change?
So I hear words like Florida is the big loser. And my study indicates that is not accurate. What is Florida is the big loser and Florida is the big gainer? And you might say, how? The answer is, if the parts of the Florida that are prone to flooding, which is, in my belief, going to get worse and worse, there's portions of flood because of sea level rise that people are measuring. And so as that happens, those parts of Florida will lose access to the 30-year mortgage. Okay. And we don't have the time to talk about it today, but there's clear evidence that we will lose the 30-year mortgage for parts of the United States because of climate risk over the next 5 to 10 years. And so when that happens, people will not want to go there because they can't get proper financing. Now, a lot of people are like, so that means Florida is a big loser. Actually, the evidence suggests that most of these people are not going to leave Florida simply because they can't live at the beach, because there are many beaches in Florida that'll be just fine. Okay, so Florida is not going to become a beachless place. The beach changes, right? It comes a little bit inward, but there's still a beach. It's still beautiful. So people still want to live near there. So the winners are places inland in Florida. The big winner is places like parts of Tampa that are 20 miles away from the sea, Orlando, Lakeland, Sarasota, places that are not necessarily as exposed are going to be the big winner. So money moves inland and maybe moves inland 5 miles, 10 miles. It should only really move 1 or 2 miles, but that's not how money moves. People are careful. So it'll move 5, 10, 15, 20 miles inland. So there's going to be a lot of inland moves. Some money will move out of Florida simply because people will be afraid to invest in Florida because they'll hear on the news worsening conditions. They'll hear on the news that this particular town lost access to the 30-year mortgage simply because there's too much exposure there. And people are like, I don't want to underwrite something 30 years. So I think that when more and more of the bad news starts to appear, there's going to be an impact on Florida there. I think there's going to be an impact on New York. There's going to be an impact on the San Francisco Bay Area. All along the coastline, we're going to see impacts, but we're going to see people move inwards. Now, not everybody will move inwards. Some people will just migrate away. So the big winner in the last 10 years has been the southeast of the United States, Texas, Florida, Georgia. These are basically the big losers because the hurricanes and the typhoons are going to make insurance so expensive and make mortgages so expensive in these areas that you're going to see some people move out of these areas. Is it going to be in the biggest migration of all time? No, I don't think so. I don't think of this as catastrophic as COVID, right? COVID obviously has created a lot of moves across the United States. It's not like that. It's a slow-moving disaster. And so what happens is that while Florida and Texas, I think, are going to stay lucrative places for people to live in, there's going to be a subsection of investors, especially rich investors, that are going to say, what states are better than these? I need to have some assets there. And the winners, and that's the big focus that I want to talk about. The winners are going to be Oregon, Washington, Idaho, places like Montana, and then some of the markets like Detroit, Michigan is very good. And you have to look at it from different aspects. You're not just looking at hurricanes and typhoons. You're looking at, let's look at flooding. Let's look at tidal flooding, which is sea level rise. Let's look at water. Let's look at water tables. Let's look at droughts. And let's grade all these states. And it's clear that Oregon has a lot of water. They have a lot of tree cover. They've got, they don't suffer from hurricanes. They don't suffer from typhoons. So it looks like Oregon, Idaho, these are definitely big winners. And why don't I talk about some of those states in the Northeast? Because you might say they're big winners too. Yes, yes. But Alan, the problem with those states is financially and fundamentally, those states are not doing so well. Whereas Oregon, Washington, and Idaho are on fire from other fundamental and structural benefits. They're already economically set for a boom in the next 10 years. So you, what you're doing is you're adding a boom on top of a boom. And that's the gold rush that I talk about. I don't think the gold rush is going to strike Michigan because of climate risk. I think gold rush is going to strike Idaho, places like Boise, places like Idaho Falls, Coeur d'Alene, Spokane, I think are going to become the cities that benefit from the gold rush. And places in Oregon, like Eugene, are going to benefit from this. So bottom line is we need to study those Western markets, Northwestern markets, which are going to become ideal places to live 30 years from now as the climate, as temperatures just keep shooting up. Phoenix becomes, it's projected that in 20 years, Phoenix will have roughly 52 days a year of over 120 degrees. Wow. You start to see concrete melt at that point of time. Will people still live in Phoenix then? Of course, it's a powerful metro. But I don't think that the rate of inward migration is going to be anywhere close to what it is today. So there's a shift, and that these shifts are what creates money for investors. Investing over a 10-year time frame. Again, I keep go back to this. If you just bought a tiny amount of Amazon stock in 1996, you would be insanely rich today. Just absolutely filthy rich. And I think that is what I'm talking about here. Climate risk will force every ship in these states to rise. Every ship. And Blackstone and places like that are leading. Have you noticed, for example, that Bill Gates is one of the largest farmers in the US? You know, you may want to check to see where he's buying farmland. Have you noticed that Blackstone itself is now talking about farmland becoming a big deal because parts of the United States simply won't have the farmland that they have today? So basically, if farmland becomes more, and you might say, you know, I'm a real estate investor, I'm not looking at farmland. So what? If farmland goes up in an area that you're investing in real estate, that real estate will go up because farmland's more expensive, which means that not it's harder to build new buildings, which means that your rents are going to go up. Your existing buildings' rents are going to go up. It's about all ships rising. These things are so incredibly powerful. We saw these effects in California over 3 or 4 decades. We then saw Texas over the last decade and a half. We've seen impacts like this in Miami. This is the next big one. I do not see any that are comparable to this. And I think it's these south, it's these northwestern states that are the big winners. So just the three that I mentioned, and Utah, I think, is going to do really well as well, because they've got some, and some of these states have challenges. I think Idaho has less challenges. Oregon has less challenges. Utah's got some challenges, but I think they'll figure out how to deal with some of these. You're going to see these smaller states do well. Notice that I didn't mention any big states doing well. You know, I don't think Texas, Florida, California are winners. I think that they're net losers over a 30-year time frame, where these smaller states are going to become hotter and hotter. And I do want to point out to you that some of this has already happened, right? So I'm not just predicting the future. Today, Google, fastest growing cities in the US, and you'll notice that Boise, Idaho comes up more often than any other city, right? Austin, Texas comes up, and might say, let me see if Austin, if it's got a high impact on climate change and low impact. And 5 minutes into your research, you notice that Austin has one of the lowest impacts on climate change within Texas, right? Within Texas. There's other parts of Texas that have a much higher climate change. Austin doesn't get a lot of hurricanes or things like that because it's pretty west. So it doesn't get hit by hurricanes. It doesn't, there's obviously no tidal flooding. It's nowhere near sea areas. So when you look at this, you go, there's a pattern developing here. Boise, Idaho is doing really well. Portland, you know, a good part of Portland that's inland is doing really well. You're seeing Spokane develop, and Spokane's nowhere near the sea. And today in 2021 ratings, Spokane off, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho Falls, places in Salt Lake City.
Before we tie things up here, you've got lots of resources on your site in conjunction to a lot of things, but you have the resources that we have been talking about today. So share with our viewers and listeners how it is that they can find you and where in particular can they get to this climate data.
Sure. First thing, finding me is really easy. I happen to be the only Neal Bawa on the World Wide Web. So if you type in N-E-A-L and then BAWA into Google, hit enter, you're going to find about 100 podcasts. You're going to find presentations at conferences and events. You're going to find online courses that I teach. These are all free. We don't charge anything. There's no pro versions. There's no subscriptions. They're meant to be free. They're meant to be free forever. The most popular course is called Best Cities and Neighborhoods in America to Invest In. And you can get access to that course in multiple ways. The most updated version is at multifamilyu.com, that multifamily university. So you go to multifamilyu.com, you will see climate change webinars. You'll see best cities and neighborhood webinars. You'll see webinars about how the banking system has changed real estate forever. That's a very fascinating topic that I like to talk about, how banking basically changed real estate forever through the use of quantitative easing and other basically flooding the market with liquidity. So we talk about those. And then about 20 other webinars. Many of them are mine, and some of them are from others. For example, today we have 1,600 people signed up to listen tonight to a guy that's actually known in the industry as one of the biggest data guys. His name is John Burns, and he runs a company called John Burns Consulting, and thousands of developers across the US use his data. So he's going to come on and talk about bubbles. He's going to talk about real estate bubbles, and he has a 20 metric system, and he says that we've now hit 11 out of those 20. So that's tonight on multifamilyu.com. So about 50,000 investors to come in and take our free webinars, and that's really the best way to start engaging with us. You might, if you're interested, for example, in any of our 22 projects, any of the 10 states that we invest in, what's the best place to start? Same thing. Go to multifamilyu.com, look at our webinars, understand our philosophy, see if it meshes with you. And then you'll probably find a call to action somewhere there on our projects. You're welcome. If you're ready to invest right now, you can go to growcapitus.com, which I'm not going to spell out here, but you can just type in Neil Bawa and you'll find a website called Grow Capitus, and you can find our investment products there.
We'll have this information in the show notes. Now, once again, it has been a pleasure, and it, as always, is enlightening. So thank you so much for being on the show, Neil.
Thanks so much for having me, Alan.
Thank you for tuning in to Real Estate Investing Abundance, brought to you by Steed Talker Capital, a company working for passionate professionals like you to develop financial independence built on solid, passive real estate investments. As part of our efforts to make the world a better place, Steed Talker Capital contributes to activities and organizations committed to better understand the equine. These endeavors attempt to enhance the human treatment of horses worldwide. Steed Talker Capital, working for a world where all creatures, great and small, flourish abundantly. For resources to develop your financial independence, connect with us at steedtalker.com.